You want to throw one in?
That's, yeah.
Go on.
Woo.
Yeah. All right. Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of Inforum, a division of the Commonwealth Club by and for people in their 20s and 30s with a mission to inspire debate around civic issues. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org/inforum. I'm Joe Garofoli, political writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. Welcome to the Inforum event entitled Comedy Spanks Politics. Yeah, I know. I'm a little worried because when you include the word spanks in an event in San Francisco, you never really know who's going to show up. So if anyone is confused here tonight or perhaps a little disappointed by what they're seeing on stage, now is the time to quietly head for the exit. Now, I've always believed that we've lost Margo. I've always believed in the philosophy, if we didn't laugh, we'd cry. Right? There's so much to talk about as our world is going crazy and our political leaders don't seem to have any good ideas about how to make sense of things. So tonight, we're going to tap the brains of these fine cultural commentators to help us laugh so we don't roll up into a weepy ball. W. Kamau Bao is best known. He is not here yet. He is en route, we hope. Is best known for his critically acclaimed solo show, The W. Kamau Bell Curve, Ending Racism in About an Hour. Margaret Cho calls him the most important guy doing comedy right now. And he's been named best comedian by SF Weekly, The Bay Guardian, and 7x7. Margo Gomez, right here, has twice won the Bay Guardian's best comedian and has been named best comedian by SF Weekly, The Bay Guardian, and 7x7. Marga has you can catch her again on September 22nd. Look at card when she takes her act to Yoshi's and served in Latin Comedy Fever. Marcela Arguello, to my far left, for you on the radio dial, is a regular at the Punchline Comedy Club and has recently shared the stage with folks like Sean Keane and Paul Mooney. And Sean Keane is referred to her as the finest export from Modesto since George Lucas. Wow. All right, so let's get to it. Now, the other day, a federal court judge in San Francisco
Joe?
Yes.
I'd just like you to know that I'm wearing a Spanx.
Yeah, very, very nice.
Yes.
And that's all for the radio folks listening.
It's a comedy Spanx.
Yes, yeah. Comic Spanx. And the other day, a federal court judge in San Francisco overturned the state's ban on gay marriage.
Yes. Yay! Yes.
Now, this everybody's legal commentator saying this is going to all the way to the Supreme Court eventually. Is this a time for celebration right now, or are people not saying, well, I don't know? What's your take on this?
You know, Joe, I was actually counting, and there was one person who didn't applaud, and so I'm trying to find that person. Is it a time for celebration? Not if you don't want to get married. Then it's a time to figure out a good excuse. Why you can't.
So the pressure's on now.
The pressure is on. The pressure is on. You know, it's I definitely have stopped drinking.
Really?
Because, yeah, you could wake up married now, even if you're gay. It's like Vegas, baby. It's like Vegas in San Francisco.
San Francisco's like Vegas.
Yeah, we got
like
a little wedding chapel in the Castro and everything. Yeah. I actually was at this... huge, amazing music festival in Michigan the day that the Supreme Court overturned Prop 8. And I got to announce it was a lesbian festival, actually, in the woods. It was like Burning Man, but we actually burn a man. Anyways, but I had the honor.
Oh, we have
speaking of the man.
We are joined by W. Kamau Bao.
Yay.
There he is.
Kamau. Hi, honey. We just did your intro.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
good.
I took a bow. I tried to pretend I was you.
I want to be you, so that's great.
The audience was confused for a moment. Go ahead. So you were in the middle of the woods, a lesbian festival.
Prop 8 was overturned. I don't know if you heard
that
come out. Yes, yes. So if you wanted
online.
To be gay, this would be a good time.
I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. So anyways, I got to announce it, and I was worried because we were, again, away from internet. It was just like lesbian, like psychic energy, and we found out about the decision in San Francisco. And I did announce it on stage, but I am very cautious. I'm always pessimistic. The Prop 8 proponents are now, of course, trying to have an appeal. to this decision. And you know, and they have the money, they fund the money. You know, how they even passed Prop 8 was because of all the money they spent on that one crazy television commercial where I don't know if you remember it.
It's coming
and the little girl comes home from school and her mom's there in the kitchen in an apron. What decade was this? She's not even drunk. She comes home from school and she says to the mommy, mommy, guess what I learned in school today? I learned that a prince could marry a prince and I could marry a princess. Well, no wonder Prop 8 passed with a commercial like that. That was alarming because we live in America. We don't have princes and princesses. They're teaching not just gay marriage, they're teaching royalty in school. I wouldn't want my child marrying a princess. Those people are lazy.
Now, some conservative commentators have said that, you know, the reason this passed is because the judge, in this case, Von Walker, is gay. Do you think, does that make a difference in this case?
It better. That would suck if it didn't.
Well, you know, a lot of gay people in office usually just go to gay bars and then do anti-gay legislation. So he would be an unusual gay person in power. But he has not, Von Walker himself or his boyfriend have not come out publicly. I mean, it's not like he didn't do like a Ricky Martin thing and tweet that he's gay. I mean, they say that it's an open secret, so I don't. Oh, they.
Yes, they.
The Chronicle.
They. The Chronicle, I believe, reported that.
Like, yeah. Like Queen Latifah. It's also an open secret that she's. Did you see that today? There's footage of her with her girlfriend on a yacht.
Really?
Yes.
So that's another.
I guess
open
I just
secret.
Blew her. Sorry, everybody. Queen Latifah's a rapper.
I
just got to look at the room. Hello, older white people. All right.
Is that why you were late? You were just getting
the scoop
on.
I was
the
at the meeting with the black people. We were talking about Queen Latifah, and you know, we went long.
Well, I was in a film with her. I was in Sphere, and we were
a classic.
Both. Yeah, she played. I played Jane Edwards, and she played Teenie, which is amazing. Already a stretch for Queen Latifah. And we were both military personnel, and in the movie Sphere, Barry Levinson film, it's a science fiction film. She dies first in the first like half hour, and then I die in this movie because they always kill the lesbians of color first is how I thought of it. But I never, you know, people would ask me, and I just said, well, you know, then.
All right.
So I don't know if maybe that's why, because Prop 8 was overturned.
I think that's why. Now, let's keep it on this. We were talking earlier that there's a recent protest involving the gay community that it actually stems from early this year. The Supreme Court ruled that corporations can give an unlimited amount of money to political campaigns. Give as much as they want. And so there's a protest, an online protest started against corporations like Target and Best Buy because they were giving a lot of money to a conservative organization in Minnesota.
From the Facebook.
From the Facebook. On the interwebs.
Yes.
And there's a protest online that started against Best Buy and Target. Now, Mark, you were a bit conflicted by this. Correct?
Well, not at first. When I heard the boycott was against Target, which is how it began, I was kind of excited because my girlfriend always makes me go to Target with her, and then I thought, well, honey, we can't because they're supporting anti-gay politicians. We cannot go there. Then I found out that Best Buy is also one of the corporations, and that's a lot harder for me because I didn't really need the jeggings, but I do like the electronics, and so I was trying to see if there was a way that we could dialogue with Best Buy.
So you drew the line at Best
yeah.
Buy. Now, shouldn't corporations? I mean, that's a free speech thing. Can't that's an expression of free speech to be able to contribute as much money as possible.
Corporations are people?
Yeah, that's what the Supreme Court ruled. Corporations are people.
Corporations are people, too.
Are people, too, yeah. Do you think that's a free speech thing? Does that fall into that category for you guys?
No. God, no. Jesus, no. No. Can I say no again? I feel like stuff like that happens anyway, and now the corporations have so much power they're able to just go, you know, we're just going to stop lying to you. We run it all. We're just going to take away all the haze. We're in control of everything. We picked Obama. We bred him genetically in a lab. half white, half African, no black.
You were.
should we get? I'm just trying to see if people are awake. That's all I'm doing.
Should we get? Should we get right to Obama? Do you think he is? Has he been a good president so far, or has he been a disappointment? We're 2 years into his term.
It's a lot of pressure. I think I'm the only black person in the room, so I know it's going to be quoted as the black community said.
I see one.
Let me see.
Where is she?
Okay, she's like this.
One black person.
It's like the groundhog.
It's all
two more weeks of racism. All right. Hi. So here's what I'm saying. Her opinion may be different than mine, so make sure when you say the black guy said, and you can ask her later what she said.
And don't try to fix them up on a date.
No, actually, because my white wife would be quite angry. All right. That's so confusing. So what's the question?
I think
Jesse Jackson is a great leader.
What do you think, Obama? Do you think he's been a disappointment so far? Do you think he's been, he's been dealt a tough hand of cards, and he's doing his best he can? Where's your take on him?
Yes.
On both.
I think here's the thing about Obama. I think as presidents go, he's probably a pretty good president. He's probably the best president we've had in a while. As black presidents, he's not a very good one.
Really?
I think there's a difference between being a good president and being a good black president. No. For example, George W. Bush, bad president, great white president. You see what I'm saying? It just depends on...
Good for the whites.
Huh? Yes.
Is he a bad president because he didn't paint the White House black? Is that why?
Yes, he was never going to do that. That was never going to happen. It's going to be a lot of black presidents in a row before we get that George Clinton lyric to come true.
Right.
Yes. Now, California, we're in bad shape here in California. We have 13...
Wow, we're done with Obama already?
Yeah. I didn't see anybody else. Nobody else was jumping on
that.
Was
quick.
Come on.
I was still tripping on the gays, that's all.
I was tripping on George Clinton.
Marcel, what do you have to say about Prop 8?
About Prop 8? I'm just sad because I'm losing all my gays to registries at the Pottery Barn, and they're all out picking out their wedding gowns, and nobody wants to go shopping to Prada with me, so I'm a little... I'm anti-gay marriage. Or Target. No, I'm... That's cool.
Actually, we're all in trouble because... As all our gay and lesbian, transgender friends get married, they're going to do it really fast because we never know when it's going to get taken away again.
Yeah.
So that means more wedding presents that we're going to have to buy. So everybody, save up.
Yeah.
Save up. Now,
this is an economic stimulus package. Is what it
yes,
is.
Yes. Yes.
Legalized gay marriage means that the economy will shoot back up because we'll all
right.
have to buy
now,
presents.
Have you guys known any gay friends who've gotten divorced yet?
Well, I have. That's also why I wouldn't want to get married, because I'm a child of divorce, and I assume that I would be one of the first same-sex divorces. And it's got to be so embarrassing, You got to go back and move in with your parents. Your mom is like, "Hello, Miss Same-Sex Marriage. Didn't work out. All right. Well, your room's upstairs. You'll have to make your bed, or is that against your rights?" I don't know how my mom sounds Jewish, but
it's kind of a generic mom voice.
Yes,
yeah.
My mom voice sounds different.
That's weird.
That's funny.
All right, let's go back to talk about unemployment here. 13% of Californians are out of work. And now, the answer in one of our neighboring states, Arizona, is that they're going to say, let's lock down our borders.
Generally, we should all look to Arizona for the answers to the big questions. That's generally, what would Arizona do?
WWAD. Let's lock down our borders and, let's start checking every person to see, make sure they're not illegal. What do you guys think about that? Is that the right way to go?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Muy bueno. Who wants to go there anyways?
I'm just glad because a lot of my people are from Alabama, which the South always gets a bad rap, and I'm really glad that Arizona looks so bad because Arizona is making the South look like the North, and the North look like Canada, and Canada looks like the holodeck of the Starship Enterprise. So as far as I'm concerned, good job. I just think what is going to happen is we've had our first black president. That's going how it's going. But I think when we get our first Latino American president, after all the crap, can we say that at the Common Club? After all the crap we put Latinos through, it's going to be brutal. She is going to be hard on this country. And we deserve it. No, so I think that, just feel like, I'm getting, I obviously, Margaret, pick it up.
Well, Governor Jan Brewer of Arizona. And I really don't mean to actually diss the state, because there's people, friends of mine, who are trapped there and can't get out. So they would love to go to Mexico. You know, so it's not – this woman, of course, is just representing the state and the hate mongers there in that state. They represent hate mongers all over this country. I remember years ago on the Phil Donahue show – I don't know if anybody remembers the Phil Donahue show. One of the shows was White Racists and Their Children – which is very sad to think. And one of the white racists on the show actually said this: "I think all the Puerto Ricans should go back to Mexico." I saw that on Phil Donahue. And then the other ones are sitting there like, "Yeah, good idea." And I'm thinking, "Yeah, I'm Puerto Rican. I'd love to go to Mexico. Buy me a ticket, you wizard." Jan Brewer said, I saw this one. I don't know. I guess maybe on YouTube. She was talking about how all the Latinos coming into Arizona are drug smugglers. Mm-hmm. She actually said, they're all mules. Everybody says so. Everybody. Like, it's like word on the street, you know, where I buy my pearls, they said. You know, it's like, I don't know what kind of relationship she has with her nannies, but if Latinos are, if that's all that Latinos are doing when they come to Arizona, then think of it this way: they're stealing jobs from American drug smugglers. So they're helping our kids.
I'm just tired of Fox News saying that illegal immigration is bad for the economy. I've heard that. And it's crazy because, I'm saying this out of fact, my cousin illegally immigrated here, and she spent $8,000 doing so, because that's the reality of it. It's actually very expensive. So I think we should tax illegal immigration and stimulate the economy that way. Because forget Prop 19, forget marijuana, like, the high of being an American is powerful.
Tax the immigrants.
Awesome. See, we're coming up with solutions already here tonight.
Tax the immigrants.
Or maybe how we do now, like a work exchange.
Yeah, that's
good. How would
guest
that work?
Guest worker program. Yeah.
Work exchange.
It goes back to the corporations. The immigrants don't come here for jobs that exist. Somebody's hiring them.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's the whole idea of it, that they're coming over here to work jobs that they're being given by American corporations somehow, but the corporations aren't being penalized for this, you know.
They're supposed to be, but they're not.
Supposed to be, but no, again, they run not. Everything. We covered that earlier. They run everything. We have no choice.
There's American. Speaking of this, there's some folks in Congress, some Republican leaders in Congress, who want to repeal the 14th Amendment. Now that's the one that says everybody born in the United States is a full-fledged citizen. So they're wanting to say, and that goes back post-Civil War days. That one's been around a while, the 14th Amendment. Now, there's a study from the Pew Hispanic Center today that said 340,000 babies were born in the U.S. in 2008 to at least one undocumented parent. So that's a lot of kids. But 80% of those kids have been around for more than a year. Where do you think this is coming from, this sentiment is coming from? And do you think there's anything to this?
I think it's coming from a lack of knowing history. I think people forget America hasn't been here that long. Our history doesn't go back that far. And when the people landed, there were already people here. I mean, there's sort of a sense that these borders, we've created these borders, they don't actually exist. And we didn't respect the borders that were here when we got here. So I don't. So to talk about, if anything, we should, I believe, open all the borders up. I think everything should be, we should start over. Everything should be legal, and then we should pull back as things fall apart. You know what I mean? I think making everything illegal it doesn't work out. Everything should be legal. First you go murder, that's not bad, then you pull it back, step by step. But I just feel like I'm running for office. But I do think that, like, the idea of that we should, the repealing the 14th Amendment is, it just shows, this is back to Obama, how scary the idea of a black president is, and how much it's making people on the extreme right freak out.
Right.
And suddenly we're talking about turning back the clock on, you know, I just know that if they start turning back the clock on that, it won't be too long before I'm like, swing low, sweet chariot.
Yeah, don't mess with the Constitution. Let's just make that a rule of thumb.
Yeah, but it's just in the talking phase, quote unquote. Now, no one
that's
wants.
That's dangerous.
We're just talking about it. That's what conservatives want to do.
Right. Not, then we'll be the angry mobs. Nobody talking. Yeah.
Just talking. We're just in the lighting torches and burning things down phase. We're just in the white hood phase of things.
Marcel, a minute ago, you were mentioning Prop 19. Now, for people who don't know, that's the proposition on the ballot. California voters this fall will vote on whether to tax and legalize and tax marijuana. So, And that could bring in an estimated $1 billion to California's economy. All of this, the budget problems, they could, you know, we could put a dent in it with legalizing marijuana.
And that's just the tax on weed. That doesn't include the tax on products that would be sold more because of weed was out there, like ding-dongs, ho-hos, Twinkies, vitamin water, Gatorade, bottled water, microwave burritos, those DVDs at the grocery store that cost a dollar that you shouldn't buy but you do because you're high. Jackie Chan made a musical. That's crazy. Get all of them. I mean, that's. I mean, it's. I think it would be triple that if we actually legalized.
It's a ripple effect.
It's a ripple effect.
Ripple effect.
I saw a commercial for that. The people who were putting that proposal together, and it was pretty wild because it was this lady in sort of a pantsuit and a sensible hairdo, and she was, "Hello, I'm Nadine Herndon. Remember her name? And I'm a marijuana consumer. I've never."
Consumer.
Never. In my 2 years in college, never heard that term. I'm a marijuana consumer.
Not in my four semesters.
My children are potheads, but I'm a marijuana consumer. We want to pay taxes because we're high.
Well, isn't that kind of a way of mainstreaming, you know, making it more comfortable for most?
But even if they legalize weed, people are still going to be growing it in their bedrooms and closets. You know, I know still going to be potheads like, I don't want that booty ass Walgreens weed. Uh-uh. Kirkland weed. No, thank you. I found
so there is a downside to that. There is a downside.
I think the downside is what are kids going to rebel against? They're gonna have a hard time rebelling against their parents. Their parents are all high and smoked out. Mom, I'm gonna go to the library and read a book.
You can't stop me from studying
chess.
I'm a law abiding citizen, and if this proposition gets passed, then I'm gonna get nothing done.
You need illegal weed so that you can actually get through your day.
Yeah.
So you can actually get to work on time.
Yeah. Exactly.
And some people who are who are supporters of medical marijuana are not in favor of this. They said, it'll create chaos. It'll sort of delegitimize medical marijuana. If everyone can use it, then it won't be medicine anymore.
Most of the country thinks medical marijuana is illegitimate, so I don't think that's going to really affect. Most of the country, whenever you go outside of California, we sort of think we're normal. Okay. But the minute you drive a half hour outside of San Francisco, you go, oh, I guess we are the weird ones. And then the further you get outside of San Francisco, you find out how the country views this state. So I don't think that, I think the medical weed people are just being mean.
They're like, selfish.
They're being selfish.
I don't think that there's any other state that celebrates the pot holiday like we do, April 20th, 420.
Yes, 420. Right. Actually, some people celebrate it every day at 420.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that's true. And then some people celebrate it on 422, the real stoners, because they don't know what day it is. But I, you know, and
some people celebrate it every day just so they don't forget to celebrate on 420.
Or set my watch. Oh, where's my watch? But to me, this isn't really much of a holiday. I don't think there should be any kind of nationalized pot holiday. I mean, if we go further and it's legalized and they want to make a holiday out of it, I hope they don't.
Really, you don't think it should be celebrated, commemorated that way?
No, because pot parties aren't really, you know, holiday parties should be festive. There should be lights, and pot parties are very dull and quiet. People forget to change the music. So,
no, I think legalized weed would be great because it would mean that all my friends who are pothead would stop talking about legalized weed. Mm-hmm. That takes up a lot of time in the life of a pothead, talking about legalized marijuana.
You know what they should do?
You know, yes, I know they can make it into rope. But yes, I get it. Yes,
it's always, yeah, it's always this is fun hemp. Doing this on the Commonwealth Club. We've taken it to a Cheech and Chong album.
This is a Commonwealth Club first, I think. Kemo is now passing it through the audience.
Kamau
I think
just
Nadine
passed it to the audience member.
It's going through the first row.
Just passed it to the next audience member.
I didn't think he was going to take some. Yes,
all right. Passing it along.
Okay.
Hey, I got you, dude. With the beard.
It took a tie. It took a
puff, puff,
a tie.
Puff, puff,
no.
Pass.
This will be a three-hour version of the Commonwealth Club.
That's the best thing that ever happened.
So let's move to, you know, there are a couple people who are vying to lead us out of this. You can't smoke the gavel.
is that from Laughing?
A couple people who want to be our governor, want to be the California's next governor.
Oh, what happened? Are there any like has-been Hollywood stars left who want to try for this?
Because
with the death of Gary Coleman,
he did run for governor. He finished like ninth or tenth. Yeah, you know, when we had the recall several years ago. Warren Beatty was thinking about it several years ago, but he didn't want to. Warren Beatty is governor. That wouldn't work for you, Mario.
Yeah. No, it's true. What happened to him? He's a flake. So unusual in Hollywood.
So we have 39 million people in this state. And here are the two that are running for governor. One of them is a billionaire. And she has never run for political office before. In fact, she's rarely voted until recently.
Never voted.
And her opponent's a guy who's 72 years old, and he hasn't really stopped running for political office. And he used to be California's governor, and he was
He used to be a lot of things in California.
He was California's governor so long ago he drove a Plymouth. That's how long ago he was governor. So what are our choices here?
He was mayor of Oakland.
Jerry Brown.
And he was Linda Ronstadt's boyfriend.
That's when he was driving the Plymouth, right? So what are our choices here?
It sounds like a euphemism.
Driving the Plymouth. Yes.
he was Linda Ronstadt's boyfriend driving the Plymouth.
It's funny.
Linda Ronstadt's album, Canciones de mi Plymouth.
Exactly.
It's very popular.
Break down our choices here for California voters. We have Meg Whitman and Jerry Brown. What can we... what are our choices here?
Frightening and whatever.
I think, didn't Michael Moore describe an election one time as the evil of two lessers? I think he was talking
about... There you
go. That was Michael Moore. He was talking about Bush and Gore the first time around. I mean, you know, like, you have to vote for... I mean, I don't know. You just... Meg, I feel like I have to vote for Jerry Brown just because...
Same
just,
way? I mean, feel
you
know, same?
CEO of eBay, you know, that's great and all, but, you know, I'd like to know.
Yeah, she's going to auction us off, which is a commodity to her.
Could raise money. Yeah. Could raise money for the state by auctioning us all off.
Yeah, yeah, or just some of us. The cuter ones. I just looked into this situation as I prepared to come to the Commonwealth Club today. And I was scared because, the more I hear about her, the more I don't feel that she will ever have my interests at heart.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be classist or anything, but her son's name is Griffith Rutherford Harsh the Fifth. So, you know, he's going to be my daddy? No.
I personally don't usually like to listen to what unattractive white people have to say. Because that's how cults get started.
You mean like eBay?
Like the Jonestown Massacre, the Whitman wipeout, you know. That's what I'm scared of. Yeah. No, I'm just saying that I'm glad I'm only ugly on the inside. Because I don't think I could handle both.
Oh, she's so fine. Marcella's so fine. Oh, you're too fine for radio.
Holla.
And how about Jerry Brown? Have you seen Meg Whitman's commercials? Have you seen them on TV?
I kind of just look at her head, and that's it. I mean,
really?
The political commercials are really, I mean, you don't really need to listen to them. They're just like, they give you as much info as seeing somebody's sign on a lawn. I mean, it's just babble. It's really babble.
I think she's trying to trick Latinos by standing in a field. Because that's what she does. She stands in the field and talks. And I know she has a large campaign in Latino and Spanish language.
Right. She just started to.
And so I think she's trying to trick them because they might not understand what's going on. But they're like, we get the field. We get that. White person in the field. We get behind it.
Finally, a white person in the field. Yeah. Yay.
You don't think that's going to bring in the Latino vote, though? For Meg Whitman,
I don't know.
She has someone named I forget his first name, but his last name is Gomez, and he's
Henry Gomez.
Henry Gomez, yes. And what is he? Is he her campaign director?
He's a very top advisor. He was with her at eBay, and he's now top campaign.
Yeah, so I've got to talk to Henry Gomez.
I mean, appealing to the Latino community is the smartest thing that she could probably do, because that was a problem with Prop 8. That was a problem with Prop 8, is when they, like, the people running it, they didn't appeal to the Latino community.
Or the people of color. I mean, it was a white campaign.
And that was the biggest mistake of the whole situation, so maybe her doing it.
They're 18% of the voters.
Yeah.
But I do want to make sure I think the whole idea that Latinos and black people are responsible for Prop 8, passing. I thought was complete.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's a complete lie, and I would love to put that out there.
Yeah, no, I agree.
The numbers don't bear out that Black people and Latinos were that if we had voted at all, it still wouldn't have passed.
No, it's statistically untrue. You're right.
Yes, thank you.
It was the chickens. It was the people who loved the chickens. Didn't like the gays.
Should we turn to the world of criminal justice for a moment? Are you ready?
I didn't do it. That's all.
Now, a few weeks ago, Los Angeles jury convicted BART police officer Johannes Messerly of involuntary manslaughter for shooting train rider Oscar Grant in the back. Now, BART is our subway here, for those of us, for people who are just listening. And Grant was laying face down on the platform and unarmed. Now, Messerly could be sentenced for anywhere from 5 to 14 years in prison for this. There were protests in Oakland night afterwards, but, Kamau, you were at a protest in Walnut Creek.
Yes.
A few days later. And yes. Walnut Creek, for those of you who don't know, is a suburb about 16 miles east of Oakland.
With about 40 years.
Yeah. What was that? Tell us about that protest.
Well, no, they had a protest in Walnut Creek at the courthouse in support of Messerly.
For the support of the officer.
So it was a rally.
I forget how mostly it was just boring. But it's hard to get a good chant going behind a guy who killed somebody, an innocent person. So I went to Walnut Creek because I don't know. I just felt like I didn't go in Oakland when they had the Oakland. When they had the rally in Oakland, and I felt bad about that, so I felt like I should go at least see the other one, because the Oakland one happened the same night with LeBron James announced what team he was going to, and
he had a lot to do.
My Black allegiances were really split that night. Oh, Jesus.
You could have T-boned
Walnut Creek or Oakland. So I went to Walnut Creek, and it was interesting because you walked past, and there was the people for Messerly were behind the walls of the courthouse, like not walls of the courthouse, but they were on the courthouse property, and they sort of closed the courthouse property down. But if you drove past, it was overrun by people who were there for Oscar Grant. So if you had driven past, you'd be like, oh, there's an Oscar Grant rally in Walnut Creek. Wow, that one sign is weird. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like every now and again, there'd be like a sign that said Free Messerly, which was Free Messerly. I don't know. I took pictures and put them up on my website, but like, and there was a Black guy holding a Free Messerly sign. Thanks. Which I wanted to pull him aside and be like, you can leave Walnut Creek. The railroad goes overground now. It's totally easy to get out of here.
And go right to therapy.
Exactly. And I think he worked for the police, and there was another Black guy who came out. But they had cops in full riot gear with the with the tear gas and everything. I mean, I would say there's probably 40 people for Messerly, probably 100 people there for Oscar, probably 100 cops in riot gear. And then across the street, there was like the residents of Walnut Creek just watching like you would watch if the circus went past your house. And for all the people on radio, I just made a funny face that 12 people laughed at. And so it was really quite – and then most of it was people there taking pictures of the crazy people at the rally who were there for the guy who killed the innocent guy in Oakland.
Now, we've all been to demonstrations in San Francisco. What are some of the differences you noticed from a San Francisco demonstration and a Walnut Creek demonstration?
Less unicycles and hacky sacks. It was clear that the people there kind of didn't know what to do. Like, the people there for Johannes Messerly didn't know what to do. It felt very the Desperate Housewives having a protest. Like, it was the signs were all very nice. They were the fonts were all consistent. they were clearly all spell checked, and there was some glitter. But then they were like sitting there. They were yelling, they were yelling that they were there in support of Messerly. And you really got to see again. You don't have to get that far from San Francisco to really find out that it's a scary world out there, and that the people were actually not just saying we like him or we know him or he's a friend of ours or anything, but actually saying we should set him free. Which I thought was like, wow, that's. That's even a bit much for a racist. You know what I'm saying?
Like, did it look like, I know it happened in Walnut Creek, but do you think that that group, 40, 50 people, whatever it was, do you think they were actually from that part of California? Or do you think maybe it was, an organization
It definitely felt a little bit, like the fact that they were on the grounds of the courthouse, it felt a little bit rehearsed and a little bit forced. And like I said, a lot of the people of Walnut Creek were sort of standing across the street like, like it was like the parade had come to town. And you know, there was never in a sense of violence. I passed one cop who was a black cop, and he said to another cop, like, "Man, this is the best beat I've had all day." Like, you know, like it was really boring, you know. So it was a, you know, there was, it was really, I thought it was going to be the possibility of there might, something might happen. And I was a little sad that nothing happened, but you know, I like when things happen.
Now, you guys, it's an example of, you know, you don't have to go too far outside of San Francisco to get a different point of view.
You can go to the marina.
Yeah.
Or when you're in the Castro, sometimes they come right to you.
You go to Pacific Heights.
You guys are on the road, you know, doing the comedy thing. What is the biggest, what's an example of something that matters here in the San Francisco, the Bay Area, more than it does out beyond the barrier? And what's an example of something, or something that matters more out there? People are, a political thing that people
are
talking
about. Well, I should just talk about where out there is, or I don't know,
beyond San Francisco.
I was going to say everything.
Yeah. No, what's
Giants?
A political issue. A political issue. The Giants.
That's a hard question.
Political issue.
Yeah, that is a hard question.
You know, everyone. I mean, I play.
Like when you were doing
a
like
lot of progressive venues and colleges, and so. I don't do a lot of the comedy clubs and, like Heartland or, I don't put myself behind like, you know, I don't know, anti-gay marriage lines, the anti-gay marriage comedy club. I don't play there. So, I usually play.
It's in Cincinnati, by the way.
I usually find that, audiences of really good comedy are usually smart enough, even if they don't agree to be at least knowledgeable about, you know, about all the issues that I talk about anyway. So I haven't found that myself.
There's a cavalierness with which you can talk about things in San Francisco. Well, it goes both ways. In San Francisco, we get really politically correct. We get really tense about other people's issues other than our own, which makes doing comedies in San Francisco difficult sometimes because people go, "Did you just say Latino? You don't look Latino." And so you have to negotiate these lines where if you go to like out of San Francisco, like even like Modesto, you don't have to negotiate those lines, which makes it can be more fun sometimes because you may not be saying anything that's inappropriate, but people here get tense about things really quickly. However, the other side of that is that I'll take for granted something like blah, 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 gay marriage, and you'll say that in someplace else that's not San Francisco, and you can feel the room go, whoa, slow down, Mr. Future. Yeah. And you have to sort of, and you can do the same, you can tell the same jokes, but you certainly have to be aware of your environment. But that's the case. I mean, that's true. San Francisco to Oakland to Berkeley, you know, you don't have to go that far. There's a lot of micro, not climates, but you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of little, what is that? Demographics. You all went to college and stuff. But there's a lot of different demographics within the Bay Area so that you can have that from one room to the next, you know. I think that, in general, like, you have to be ready to think on your feet when you start doing comedy in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm. Rosal, you being the best export from Modesto since George Lucas, what's some stuff that you can do, like, if you're somewhere closer to home that doesn't play well here and vice versa?
Well, I mean, Kamau really hit it on the head talking about the sensitivity here that people have, political correctness, and it goes back to, because, you know, I have a joke, and I'm Latina, and I have a joke where I say the word nigga, and out here, like,
whoa,
people get scared.
Even I got a little bit. I'm just kidding, I don't.
But everywhere else, people are. I mean, it's. I'm quoting a rapper and what something he says, you know. And out there in the universe,
somewhere out there, clear the
people just kind of. I mean, it's not an issue because people in San Francisco. Obviously, I mean, if you're living in San Francisco, you already kind of have a higher cost of living, and you know your priorities are a little bit different out here. People don't think about we have to shop at Walmart, and we have to, you know, people just shop wherever they want and they do whatever they need to do. But in Modesto, everything's a little bit different. I mean, the poverty there is it's real, and the ghettos are there, and you know, so
that they're not as much worried about, you know, and so it's good and bad. Like a friend of mine put it great. Kevin Avery said that doing comedy in San Francisco is like. It's like when the baseball player goes up to bat and swinging with three bats, and then when you leave San Francisco, you're only swinging with one. It's like you go, "Oh my god!" And the gloves are off. I can hit home runs all day. I feel like Barry Bonds.
Yeah, that's people. When people go out to see a comedy show in Modesto, they're out to just laugh at anything, everything. It's like they kind of don't. They're not. They want a break from their crazy, stressful life. And out here, it's just people want to have an opinion, and they have to support something, and it's this and that and the other. And it can be kind of hard, but you grow. Yeah. There's
a lot of thinking before laughter happens out here that we've heard in this room tonight.
Mm-hmm.
there's a lot of like, well, I'll look that up when I get home. I don't know about that. I'll email you. I mean, I do. Every now and again, I do get LOL, LOL. That was very funny. I should have laughed when it was live.
Yeah.
Mark, oh, were you saying? No.
I just agree that it is, I think, the only, I think the biggest difference here is the amount of sensitivity and inhibition to laugh sometimes, mm-hmm. until you have to figure out if it's okay. Is she qualified to talk about that group? Is she qualified to even talk about herself?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little...
That is a big one.
Yeah. So sometimes there's a delay.
And also because San Francisco specifically is... There's a sense in San Francisco that because you have the zip code... You don't have to defend anything else you do. And so sometimes as a comedian, if you're talking to an audience and you're sort of challenging them about things they do, there's a sense of like, well, no, you're not talking about me. And there's also that sense about like, you know, that I feel, as I said here earlier, that like a lot of times in San Francisco in comedy settings, I'm the only black person or one of the only black persons. And I have a very clear sense of like, I want to make these group of people know I'm not speaking for all the black people. You know, because San Francisco is 6% black, and I know you might not see a black person for 2 weeks. So I have to be aware of the fact that I have to sort of make sure clear, this is just my opinion. Don't take this back to your white people meeting. All right. And see, they thought about it, and then someone went, I'll laugh at that. See what happened?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, that's a little funny.
White people meeting.
And some people went, wait, does he mean the Klan? And so I can't laugh at that because I don't look like I'm in the Klan.
And on that note, as people start thinking of questions, we're going to start taking your questions soon, so please start lining up at the mic right now. There's a mic right there.
I got questions.
If you have something that you have thought about and you want to ask one of these cultural commentators about, line up, and we'll be going to that in a couple minutes. I want to throw out a media question for you, or how the media took something and kind of it spun into something huge. Shirley Sherrod, who is the agriculture department employee. Andrew Breitbart, conservative commentator. He creatively edited some of her remarks, the NAACP, to totally take them out of context.
Mm-hmm.
She was subsequently fired from the agriculture department after it spun all across the media. And then when folks took the time to actually listen to what she said, she was offered her job back, and that's where we are right now.
She hasn't taken it back. Last I heard, she hasn't taken it back.
No, she's still thinking about it.
I'd like her to run for governor. Wherever she runs for governor, I will go live in that state. She handled that spectacularly.
What did that whole episode tell you? Because that's a lot of things going on there. There's the conservative media aspect. There's the Obama White House kind of reacting, you know, very kind of knee-jerk to it. There's the offering the job back. There's... And there's how that has spun out of control. So
it was
for
me, it's all about the disingenuousness of the American media and the American political process, because even how it all went down so poorly, at the end, the Obama administration offered her a job to be in charge of racism at the USDA, which was like, since we don't know how to handle it, how about you handle it? Like, why would she want that job? Like, you know, like, you, how about you handle it from now on? No, you should have handled this. This never should have happened. And again, this goes back to my whole black president thing, is that I think a little bit I get frustrated, because what is the point of the black president if he's not to get the back of black people in trouble when something hits the fan? Like that's the basic point of the black president, that he should step forward. And Obama blamed the media cycle, and I'm like, dude, you're the one who used this whole media thing to get into office, you know? Yes, we can. Remember that? I still got the T-shirt. So really, for me, it was really a referendum on how, and the NAACP, it was just like, you know, they had woken up like 2 weeks before to charge the Tea Party. And then when Breitbart brought to them, apparently they still had sleep in their eye, and they were like, what? And they just sort of responded without paying attention. And I feel like with the NAACP, it's like, just go back to sleep. We'll get you... when we hit, like, a supermarket needs to be opened or something. They're not really stepping up the way that we need them to at this point.
I agree.
Yeah. All right.
It just felt like it seemed like a gossip blog. Like it was Perez Hilton or something. Yeah. You know, it was so ridiculous the way that they didn't, you know, do their job, basically. Nobody did their job. It's just like Perez Hilton said, oh, she said the N-word or something. And then everybody's like, she's out of here. Somebody had to tweet something or other. And
right.
I don't know.
Everybody fell down on their job.
Just seemed like this wouldn't happen, or actually, you know, you never know what happened 10 years ago.
It's all thanks to Facebook and Twitter and the internet, which is like one of our. Those are great inventions, but they have accelerated nonsense as much as they've accelerated nonsense. You know, we get nonsense much faster than we used to. You know, it would have taken weeks to get nonsense, but now it's like you get it that day.
Instantaneous nonsense.
It's instantaneous nonsense. No. I mean, I even think like about weird stories like the Michael Richards thing that happened years ago. Like, it was only because of the internet and cell phone cameras that was able to become a nationwide news story. Yeah. Like, 10 years before that, it just would have been, did you hear about the time he did that? It would have been a legend that had been spread around comedy clubs. It wouldn't have become a national news story.
Yeah.
And so it's just, and if anybody, the Obama White House should be used to handling that. You know, I just think it.
They were experts in
yeah, the they were supposed to be experts in the new media.
And now we're at the questions portion of our program, and we have a questioner right here. Go ahead, sir.
Thanks for coming, guys. This was great.
Thanks.
Being that you guys are in entertainment, I'm a huge fan of the Daily Show. And they make several references to our country's media sources. So I was curious whether you guys had any input into the state of our country's media sources, good, bad.
What do you mean by like the network news and the
news sources? Yeah, yeah.
So are you asking? And tell me if this is not your question. Are you asking sort of what's their daily media diet, maybe? What they tune into, or what's their opinion of
opinions?
Opinions, okay.
I totally am every day saddened by the loss of newspapers in this, you know, on the planet, I listen to the radio for news. I know that you know, there was a study that I guess people certain demographic gets most of their news from The Daily Show, from you know, from Comedy Central, and I was like, well, okay, that's not quite really the way to get the news, but it certainly is superior to how people get it now, which is from Facebook postings. So we've actually found lesser ways to get the media as a culture. But I, you know, it's troublesome because newspapers were able to go in depth in a story, and it's very hard to, you know, except for like AP sources and international sources, it's very hard to get local in-depth news. I mean, I'm so glad that we've got the Chronicle.
Me too.
But, you know, there's less and less pages. There's more advertising needing. There's less ink. And, yeah, so it's kind of a disturbing trend, I have to say.
I mean, I think that the great thing about, like, I think it's like everything. Like, people at one point were like, one day there's going to be 500 channels, and what will be on those channels? And there's a sense that there's a lot of nonsense out there. But if you look for it, there's actually a lot of good stuff out there. Like, I think podcasts are one of the best way to sort of, there's a lot of great media out there that's not the mainstream media, like, you know, that's not MSNBC or CNN, and there's a lot of way to get news that isn't the traditional way to get news, like the newspaper, like Democracy Now. I listen to Democracy Now every day, like
Democracy Now is
vitamins,
amazing,
you know, just because to get other news other than the stuff that you will find on Yahoo News' homepage, which is a good place to start, but you wouldn't want to stay there, you know. So I personally think that there's a lot. You have to be more on top of how you want to take in what you want to take in now than you used to be. But it's certainly, I think, overall it's better because there's just, if you invest the time in finding stuff out, you can find out a lot of interesting things.
But there's so much inaccuracy now because it's coming, you know, one story is coming from like so much hearsay. Mm-hmm. And podcasts are great, but it's almost like an oral tradition that, you know, the stories are coming from sometimes just personal experience. Mm-hmm. And then as far as gathering up the news sources, like, just look at other internet sources, and then they...
Well,
like,
I've noticed very common now that on the news they will quote people's Twitter feeds,
which
I think is super great. Like, according to his Twitter account, and this is like, wow. That's
according to 140 characters.
Yeah.
Or if you think you're trying to get an article from the internet, now they just show you the video. It's like no words.
Yeah,
so just
click. Yeah. That's kind of obnoxious.
And I've recently started watching... I've actually started making a point to watch Glenn Beck every day because... Exactly.
And I got to laugh.
Well, no, because there's all this. I think we do this on the left a lot. We see like a clip of Glenn Beck on like a thing, and you go, that guy's a nah, and you have no idea what he's doing. And I feel like it's way better to go find out what he is doing, so you can have an informed opinion about it, because that makes us know better than the right, sort of these uninformed opinions. Well, Glenn Beck is a lot, and you watch and you go, oh, I get it now. You know, it's like, and I feel like Glenn Beck works because he's as much informed by how Jon Stewart does things as Keith Olbermann is informed by how Jon Stewart does things. They've taken this thing called the news and they've made it more engaging, you know. So I go through streaks like that where now I'm watching Glenn Beck and a little bit of Bill O'Reilly just to see what's going on.
Oh, I always listen to the right wingers. I listen to Rush Limburger. Yes. I bought a little radio from Walgreens and I have it in my kitchen. It's like the only station I can get. It's not because I'm trying. It's the only station I can get, but it's like, oh, this is horrifying. And
well, you know what's also interesting about the right and the left is really not figured this out. And the reason why Jon Stewart and Colbert are so big is because, and the thing about them, they don't claim to be news sources. When they are told that people get their news from them, they get really sort of like, we are on Comedy Central, you know.
Right.
Like as Jon Stewart says, a show that has a talking poo follows me, you know, like so. I think that Jon Stewart is trying to have a comedy show just based around the news. So it's not really – you can sort of get in a – you shouldn't be getting your opinions from Jon Stewart. But the rest of the left's news sources, they do this sort of very dry, very bookish, very sort of like we're right and we don't have to –
it's very earnest. It's not entertaining.
Yeah. It doesn't show that there's passionate people on the left. And that's why Keith Olbermann sort of blew up because he actually seems a little bit passionate about it sometimes.
Yeah.
But whereas on the right, there's this Glenn Beck and this sort of Bill O'Reilly. They will actually get mad. And it's like – and that's comforting in some way because that means that they care about it. It's not just a theory. It's not fantasy baseball.
Connect with the viewer. We have another questioner. Go ahead, sir.
So I'm curious about what new material you could be doing related to the current administration. I had an opportunity to see Obama here in San Francisco, and I had this strange, what I call strange encounter, but maybe it was normal, where I shared some information with him. I spent 2 hours at the railing, and I asked for a photo, and he said, no, there's too many people. I thought it was everybody else around me was under 35, and he just didn't want to get a photo with an old guy because I had a tie on, American tie, and a long sleeve shirt. But the weird thing is I saw him on C-SPAN, and people would give him books, and he would autograph them off stage, and they were supposed to pick them up later on. So I gave him his book, and he said, you know, I'll sign it off stage, and you can pick it up front. And I said, sure, no-brainer. And then when I went up front, the people up front, about five people, knew nothing about this. And so I'm spending 15, 20 minutes there discussing. I want my book back. And there was a couch. I sat down. They would come up and say, we'll give you a brand new book. And I said, no, I want my book that I've annotated.
Okay. Sir, can we get to your question?
Would you like an autograph?
The president calls your book.
We would love it.
It's just this weird thing that I thought eventually I was going to get arrested for a protest.
Sir, we got to get to the question. There's people behind you who want to speak.
What is the new material?
New material on Obama.
New material?
Come on.
What are you looking at me for? Oh, the black guy.
You're black.
If you go to my website, goodshownegro.com, you can... That's the truth.
Serious.
You can buy my new CD, Face Full of Flour, and it's filled with material about Obama.
Too.
Face Full of Flour.
Love it.
Yeah.
Amazon.com.
Ma'am, your question.
Yeah, I have a question. I recently went to a five-day conference on global direct democracy, and George Lakoff was there, and he was talking about the fact that the right wing is very, they will lie, they will say anything they can to get their message across. But, you know, the progressives are, you know, all they do, like Obama, they're very factual. They think that rational thinking will convince people. But it doesn't seem to work that way. So I just want to throw that out to you as far as the media is concerned and how to get our message out. Seems to me that Jon Stewart does a better job of explaining things to people because he uses comedy like you guys do to get a progressive message across.
He's artful with the news, and art is very powerful.
But I think the problem with Jon Stewart, he's not trying to change anybody's mind, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He did change, he got rid of that Crossfire program because he
thinks... but he did that by, that's one...
That is a public service.
That is a public service.
I think the progressives just need to start lying. That's...
I've met some liars in the left. I have, but
some passionate liars.
Yeah,
I think it's the passion thing. I think progressives are too cool for passion.
They're too high.
Yeah. Or the passion comes in weird ways. Like you'll get recycling. It's good, but there's where the right does a really good job of lining people up behind God and country.
Yeah.
And then if everything they say comes under that auspice, then sort of they can sell anything.
Not to get all weird conspiracy theory, but also on the left, protests and so on. There's super left, wacky, off the grid people. And I always wonder, are they actually with us or are they hired?
They could be plants.
You don't know. So I think we need to infiltrate the right.
The looting in Oakland that happened after the Oscar Grant verdict was, or the Measly verdict. That, most people said that wasn't the residents of.
Those weren't Oakland folks.
Yeah.
Sir, you have a question for the panelists.
I'm so happy that you guys are talking about the loony left right there, because that is exactly what my question pertained to. Is that what do you guys precisely see as the future of the Democratic Party, or do you see that it can be reformed entirely, or that there needs to be some sort of independent left kind of focus that will result in sort of national policies that, oppose war and sorts of things like that don't seem to be coming from the Democratic Party right now.
Somebody's got to just be completely honest and unapologetic and, just like brave and somehow just be able to circumvent all the handlers. And, I do worry that Obama is he's, I don't know, there's this wall between him and us right now. Mm-hmm. And, this whole deal when you are progressive that to get anything done, they say you have to go to the center. And I suppose it's the same for people on the right. But that's the thing about Jerry Brown. I mean, he doesn't fake it. I mean, would mm-hmm. you say? As wacky as he has been in the past and whatever reputation he has, I mean, I think he's an honest person. And to me, that's just the future of the planet is for leaders who are honest and.
Well, until we stop basing the presidency on until we get out of the need to elect the tallest, best looking guy to be the president. I think we sort of that limits a lot of our choices.
Speaking of Dennis Kucinich.
Exactly. Not very good looking, kind of short.
Too honest also.
Yeah.
He said he had seen UFOs, and that's when it's okay, mm-hmm. I can't, it's grave about the gay marriage, but should not have said that.
Until we get past the infatuation with the tallest, most good lookingest guy, we're sort of doomed. We're doomed. That's what it comes right down to. And I think
campaign should just be on the radio.
Yes.
There we go. The all radio kit. This is another great idea that's come out of tonight. Sir, you have a question.
Sorry. So in conclusion to my question.
We're in conclusion. This is part two of your question.
Okay.
What was the?
Yes.
Unless we get out of the malaise, I think it goes back to what we were saying before about we need to, people on the left need to be as fired up and passionate mm-hmm. about what they believe as people on the right are. And if that doesn't happen, then we are doomed, sir. So, get some fire in you.
There's an upbeat note. Sir, question for the panelists.
Thanks for taking my question. I'm just wondering, I see we talked a lot about Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert, but it seems like comedy is a big part of the political dialogue on the left, and it doesn't seem to be as big a component on the right. Maybe that's just me being a liberal not paying attention, but it seems like, SNL, a lot of comedy has a liberal bent to it, and I'm just wondering if you can comment on why conservatives aren't funny.
Do you know Glenn?
They're not. Well, they're hilarious. Yeah.
But Glenn Beck is... He does comedy on the road. Well, he does funny.
And in all fairness, the biggest comedians in the country are Larry the Cable Guy, Jeff Foxworthy,
there you go,
and that other dude.
But they're not right wing.
But they certainly the blue collar comedy. They're not espousing. They don't limit that.
It's not conservative politics.
I was taken to task on that one.
Oh really?
And then Will and I forget who else was. Brian Copeland. They said no, they're blue collar, and everybody thinks they know what they're hearing, but actually they're kind of just non-political.
And Limbaugh does play it for laughs too. Limbaugh plays it for laughs. Occasionally, yeah.
Maybe
not laughs that you get, but
they use humor as a weapon, is a weapon. It's a tool. They probably don't find us very funny, but.
But I think there's also a thing that, in general, the way humor sort of works best is when the perception is that the little guy is attacking the big guy. Mm-hmm. And in general, in this country, the liberal is always portrayed as the little guy, and so the liberal it's easy to make jokes. It's easy to make humor out of attacking the big guy, which is usually the right. There is a lot of humor that goes the other way, but it's certainly thought to be mean, and it happens.
Racist, exactly. And
there's plenty. We will take you to some comedy clubs. You'll see some very racist, homophobic, and sexist humor, so you can see that and you'll see lots of people laugh at it. Mm-hmm. But. It's certainly not, I've seen those things where, like, there have been, like, Kelsey Grammer backed this thing called the Right Network, and it was like a conservative network, and I don't know if it exists yet, but you can see it on YouTube, and they had like a right wing comedy show.
Such a fake.
And it was horrible. Like, it was absolutely.
Right. He used to hang out at this dyke bar, actually. So there you go, Kelsey.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. We know. You were out there in your tan suit at Meow Mix in New York. We know about you, Kelsey.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I find interesting actually about Stephen Colbert is that he's a lot of people think that he is a liberal comedian. A lot of people think that he's a conservative comedian.
Yeah.
And that's the interesting thing about him. And I feel like that's what makes him so popular. And he's found this balance where conservatives think that he's making fun of liberals, and liberals think he's making fun of conservatives. And he actually, in his own personal life, he's actually said that he's Christian, mm-hmm. and like he's pretty. Not that he'd say he's conservative, but he's not.
Well, that's why I think those guys are. I mean, I think who knows how they vote, but they're certainly like they're entertainers.
Yeah,
they're hired.
Yeah.
It's a comedy show.
Yeah, he's a satire. He's a satirist.
What is funny is wins.
Great. The Fox News guy, yeah.
We are almost out of time, but it is a new tradition of 2010 that we are asking all the speakers the following question.
Jesus.
Marcella, Marga, Kamau, what are your 60-second solutions to change the world?
So this is like the SATs here, you know?
Yes. 60 seconds.
I'd like to buy the world a health food cola.
Kombucha. I think kombucha is the answer.
Kombucha.
Yeah,
kombucha. Yes.
Answer to everything.
Kombucha, my lord.
Homemade kombucha.
Homemade kombucha.
Oh, is it my turn?
Yeah.
That wasn't even 60 seconds.
I don't need 60 seconds.
This might end the tradition.
Here's how you change the world.
You have 80
seconds. Absolutely how you change the world. This is absolutely how you change the world. And it's going to be, and I know it's already, I can already feel it, where this is going to go, but here we go. I think that if straight white men
mm-hmm.
weren't allowed to speak in public for like the next 50 years, the entire planet would change.
Well,
all right. I can get behind that.
We can start that right now. You can do the
quiet
closing.
Joe.
I'll shut up.
Yes, you've already ruined it. We gotta start.
Okay.
From the point that you close this out.
This will be the last word. He just grabbed the gavel.
I picked
right
up
away.
The gavel. Yes, as the white man often does.
Yes.
So this will be the last words that the white men speak for the next 50. The straight white men speak for the next 50 years. If you're not already a member, please consider joining in Forum.
That's how to change the world.
Yes, this will change the world for just $6 a month. Receive perks and discounts to every Commonwealth Club event and help to support this valuable nonprofit. Now, this meeting of Inforum and the Commonwealth Club is adjourned.